Introduce yourselves, please.
Hi, I'm John Holt from Fox 4 News, co-anchor the 5 and 9 p.m. newscast here, and had the privilege of co-moderating the debate with our colleagues in St. Louis at Fox 2 last Monday night, with the Republican gubernatorial candidates.
Excellent. And?
Jason Rosenbaum, political reporter for St. Louis Public Radio.
Very good. No politicians here today, just us reporter types to talk about the 2016 Missouri Republican gubernatorial race. So here we go.
This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff.
And I'm Brian Ellison. We're using coffee
and donuts
to better understand the legislatures on both sides of the state line,
the issues and the people in Topeka
and Jeff City. Here we go. Welcome to the production studio at KCUR 89.3. I'm Brian Ellison. We are here with John Holt and Jason Rosenbaum to talk about the 2016 Republican governor's race, one of the few hotly contested statewide primary races this year. And we're going to start with a little observation and maybe a confession in part. We thought about having a Republican citizen join us on this podcast. Not the easiest thing in the world to find a Republican who is both engaged with this race and also undecided about it. It seems like even though these candidates have been declared and campaigning for quite a while, this just really isn't the top of mind for many folks. At least, is that what you've observed, John?
I think that's safe to say, at least in this metropolitan area, and I'd be interested to hear what Jason's thoughts are. I was thrilled to be a part of the debate with the candidates. I didn't get a chance to see the ratings. I suspect that on a night where the hometown baseball team was playing and a host of other things are going on. Yeah, folks are on vacation. It's summer break. They're not yet engaged in the political process, except maybe at the national level. They're watching the Donald Trump show and somewhat amused by what's happening there. But I don't know that locally they're paying a whole lot of attention. So the goal is to get them engaged.
Yeah, maybe always the challenge of an August primary. Jason, is that what you're seeing out there?
I would say so. All four candidates just started running ads this week. It's the beginning of June, and believe it or not, it's kind of almost a lifetime away from August 2nd. A lot is going to happen between now and when the primary actually occurs. And I would venture to guess that as the primary gets nearer and the ads just start saturating the airwaves, like I was going to make some clumsy food or bee metaphor there, it's going to be hard not to pay attention if you're Republican to that particular contest. The other thing is that three of the candidates out of four are from the St. Louis area. I would imagine that it's going to be pretty divided between those three candidates in the metropolitan area over here.
Let's go ahead and talk about each of those four candidates in the race. We'll listen to some of their ads when we as we go along. Let's talk first. Let's do alphabetical. Let's talk about John Bruner. His tagline is "Manufacturer, Marine, Missionary, Missourian" on his website. John,
Brian, just let me start with an overview that I really do think, and I don't have a dog in this hunt, obviously. I really think this is a fascinating group of candidates. I think all four bring great things to the table. I think Missouri Republicans have a great set of choices here, mm-hmm. all for very different reasons. And as we go through the candidates, that will become evident. But John Bruner is certainly likes to position himself as an outsider. We know he ran in 2012 and lost to Todd Akin in the primary for the Senate. But yes, he's selling himself. He is the CEO. He is the businessman. It's going to take a businessman who understands jobs and the economy, who's built a business, who's employed people. He likes to talk about how one of the employees took him out to show him his new F-150 pickup truck that he'd purchased. He grabbed the CEO and took him out to the parking lot. And that gives him great pleasure, he says, to be able to provide jobs for families in Missouri. And he wants to do that for the entire state as the chief executive of the state.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, that he's doing that at a time when the top of the ticket is going to have a business person at the top of the ticket that has not been exactly a unifying figure for the party.
Well, and that came up during our debate Monday night when he talked about Mr. Trump, and he talked about he doesn't always agree with him. on all of the issues and some of his approaches to campaigning and some of the things he says. But he essentially said, I will support the ticket. And at the end of the day, he said, I hope Donald Trump will campaign with me, in answer to the question of whether or not he'd be seen on stage with Trump.
Jason, obviously, John Bruner is one of those St. Louis area candidates. How well do St. Louis voters know him?
That's hard to say, because it's been 4 years since he's run for the U.S. Senate. And there are instances where somebody runs for a statewide race and loses, and people still remember who they are, and that helps them in their second time around. A big example that I always like to bring up is U.S. Congressman Blaine Lucemeyer ran for state treasurer, lost to Sarah Steelman, and then 4 years later won a highly competitive race for Congress. So obviously, Bruner is banking on that scenario helping him the second time around. Oftentimes, when you lose your first race, you learn what you did wrong. You kind of restructure your approach to campaigning, and you try to avoid the mistakes of the first campaign. So the other thing that Bruner has, I guess, that some of the other candidates don't have, is basically access to a lot of his own money. I'm pretty sure that he's already put in about $3 million of his own money, and that has been used to run ads all over the state, especially in Republican-leaning areas. I just think that one of the things that he has that's somewhat of a disadvantage is he's running as sort of the outsider non-politician, but there's another candidate in the race, which we'll talk about later, Eric Greitens, who's basically trying to occupy that same space. And then, you know, I just have to wonder if both are kind of trying to run as a similar archetype of a candidate, is only one of those candidates going to be kind of a top tier contender there? I think we'll find out in the subsequent weeks which one of those two kind of rises to the top. But my guess is the one and two, the person in the first slot and the second slot, it's going to be somebody with electoral experience and maybe somebody without it. I don't think we're going to have a situation where Bruner and Greitens are one and two, just because they're very similar archetypes of candidates.
Well, and I'm struck by the fact that without really substantial policy differences between these candidates, and maybe we can flesh out where there are even minor policy differences, but they have to find other lines to try to divide one from the other. And as you say, trying to occupy that same space as the outsider is going to be tough when an outsider may not even be the number one choice here. You mentioned Eric Greitens. Let's talk a little bit about Eric Greitens. His tagline and on his campaign materials is always former Navy SEAL conservative outsider. It's right there in the tagline. If you don't think that Navy SEAL training and experience is important to him, check out his new campaign ad this week.
I'm Eric Greitens. For too long, Missouri's been run by career politicians, owned by corrupt consultants, high-paid lobbyists, and special interests. While they get rich, Missourians are hurting. Well, I'm no career politician. I'm a Navy SEAL, and I'll take dead aim at politics as usual. I'm Eric Greitens. If you're ready for a conservative outsider, I'm ready to fire away.
It's always a good idea to blow stuff up, I think. What do you think, John?
Don't you think that plays well?
It's visually, it gets your attention, I guess.
It absolutely does. And underscore the term outsider. And Jason's absolutely right. Here's a guy, and he can truly position himself there because he has not sought elective office, as Mr. Bruner has. No, he's playing the Navy SEAL card, which is big, particularly outstate Missouri. And again, we're playing for the base here, conservatives who will go to the polls in August and vote. They will vote. And that's what Eric Greitens is working hard to do. And he's trying to tap into that frustrated group. And he talks about it in interviews. He talks about it in all of his forums and debates. They've had 12 so far. He keeps hammering that theme, corrupt politicians, inside game you can't be a part of. He's the outsider. He's the new guy. He's the Navy SEAL. That's the leadership he brings to the table, is as a Navy SEAL with tours of duty in Afghanistan and Iraq. What he won't mention is that he went to Duke. Mm-hmm. He's a Rhodes Scholar. He's a bright guy. He's a good-looking guy with a young family. I mean, he's going to be a player, and he's raising a lot of money right now.
There's a time when those would have been assets for seeking higher office.
I don't know that that will play, and I don't think you'll hear him talk about that in any of his ads.
What do you think, Jason? Do you think these gun-focused ads are playing well?
Well, okay. I've had a lot of thoughts about this ad. If you look on Twitter, I think that the Greitens detractors have just riddled this ad with immense criticism. I've seen a lot of political ads in Missouri, and a lot of them are very forgettable. Most of them are just B-roll of the candidate and a voiceover talking about how great the candidate is. This clearly tries to take things in a different direction, although I wouldn't say it's necessarily super, like, revelatory, because a very similar ad came out in the 2010 era with Joe Manchin basically taking a gun and shooting the cap and trade bill. I'm not exactly what Greitens is shooting at to cause that explosion. I'm assuming it's, like, bad Jefferson City values or something like that. But,
right, right. And really, it doesn't seem like a very safe situation if you're shooting and that sort of explosion happens as a result.
And I just want to kind of bring this up because I don't think this has really been talked about a lot when discussing this ad. And I've interviewed Greitens before. I've started reading his book. I know the mission continues. His nonprofit that he started has really touched a lot of lives and does take kind of the tolls of war seriously. So I want to say that from the outset that I think that as somebody who has fought in several tours of battle, Greitens obviously knows the realities of war. I just wonder if the way that ad was structured almost trivializes war or kind of glorifies it in a way. Because if you talk to some other people in Missouri politics who have either gone to Iraq or fought in the war on terror, like Stephen Weber, a state representative from Columbia, or Paul Kirtman, who's a Republican from the Franklin County area, I think that they may – I haven't talked to them about this ad, but I know – I have talked with them about their experiences fighting in serving in the military. I don't think that they would have made that type of ad because it gives this impression that, like, war is somehow something to be glorified. And I'm not sure that that's a mindset that Eric Greitens has, but I kind of got that sense from watching that ad. And it's a little – unsettling from a perspective of talking with some other veterans who are in Missouri politics.
Well,
if you had that same view as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, as John said, Jason, I feel like he's a Rhodes Scholar. He went to Duke. Do you almost feel like he's putting on something of an act by, you know, pulling out the gun and making explosions happen?
I don't want to say that because I just have to kind of assume that he decided to do that ad because he thought it was the most effective way of going about it. And it clearly has created a lot of attention. But again, although this is probably not something that's going to play in the Republican primary because it's more of a national type issue than anything else. I just wonder this, the way it kind of came about and kind of the tone it was setting may not be – it may not actually showcase the reality of what it's like to be a soldier in the best way. I mean, I would seriously have somebody talk with Representative Weber, who, like Greitens, was in Iraq and dealt with some pretty heavy stuff and actually filmed an ad back in 2008 that was much, much different than that. And I have to just wonder maybe if it struck the wrong tone as I just mentioned.
Jason, I think you have a point. I think what they're trying to do immediately is create some buzz, which they have. This is sort of anecdotal, but I had a one-person sort of focus group recently at our TV station. I won't mention any names, but he you can't even vote in the Missouri primary, but he saw that ad and loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a guy who's patriotic and supports the troops. And, I mean, he saw that ad and said, oh, that's the guy I'm voting for. He didn't know who Eric Greitens was.
Right.
And so that's, the I think, the initial reaction that they're hoping for, one would guess now that, okay, you came out of the gate with that, and I think there will be people, and particularly veterans, who will say, wait a minute. Now I think they'll have to shift their game and focus more on, okay, who is this guy? I think you'll see pictures of him with his family, and you'll see, you know, right. So introducing him in a much more, in a much softer way.
And maybe it's my imagination, but it seems to me that John Bruner's campaign in the last month or two has been playing up more that he is a Marine, and that they want people to remember that.
They do remind people of that. He reminded folks of that during the debate and every other forum that he's been a part of. And again, that's something that I think a lot of people respect and appreciate. And if you're going to You're going to say that, businessman, Marine, as much as you can.
And I was just going to chime in a little bit again. The reason I was kind of hesitant to bring that other point up is from reading some of Greitens' books, including one where it consists of letters between him and somebody who I think had post-traumatic stress disorder, it's very, very clear to me that Eric Greitens understands the toll of war and understands the impact that that happens when soldiers are sent into battle. I mean, I know that for a fact because he experienced it himself, and his entire nonprofit, A Mission Continues, is trying to, you know, help a lot of veterans deal with some very heavy issues. So I do think he is very much aware of this. I just think that the way that ad was structured and the way it kind of came about may not have sent that message. And I may be alone in this, and this is obviously something that's less political and more stylistic. And it's maybe because I've been reading the biography of Harry Truman, who fought in World War I and who obviously had a lot of thoughts about the toll of war on not only him but his comrades. But it was something I thought about, and I think that it's going to remain to be seen the effect of that on the voters in the Republican primary, because as was just mentioned, a lot of people really liked the way it came about, essentially.
Well, if John Bruner and Eric Greitens are angling to occupy the same outsider space, the other two candidates in this race have no real ability to claim outsider status. Catherine Hanaway is former Speaker of the Missouri House, the first and only woman to hold that office. She's a former U.S. attorney. And, of course, Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder has been in Jeff City in that role for three terms now, and in the state Senate before that. Both of them touting their experience and yet talking about the ways that they plan to change the culture. In fact, in the debate that you co-moderated, John, the other night, Catherine Hanaway made a point of saying that she actually has experience in changing the culture of the Missouri House.
Well, I'm the only one on this panel who's created a cultural change in Jefferson City. Not only was I the first Republican speaker in 48 years, I'm the only woman who's ever been Speaker of the House. That was a long time ago. It was 12 years ago. But at the time, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch said that under my leadership, the culture had actually changed in Jefferson City, that praying had replaced partying in our state's capital. Then I went on to be a federal prosecutor. I put corrupt politicians behind bars in jail. I know how to lead on these issues. We do need leadership. Banning gifts, closing the revolving door, truth in campaign financing will help us level the playing field. So all businesses do have a change.
I don't know. Do you think Catherine Hanaway can make a believable claim that she could change the culture in Jeff City when she's been part of it?
Well, it's certainly a theme. And she's also, as Peter Kinder is embracing the fact that she's been there. I think you're going to see her point more to her role as a prosecutor, mm-hmm. as a U.S. attorney. That's been my sense. And Jason, I don't know about you, but she's really focused on making Missouri safe, dealing with crime. And she links it, and I believe she did in the debate the other night, links it to economic development, that if you provide a safe place, jobs will come, businesses will come. And I think that's what she'll focus on. But she does take advantage of the recent history, the news last year that came out of Jefferson City. I think she's playing off of that to say, you know, when I was in charge of the House, we did change the culture. And that's really something that, again, embracing the insider nature as opposed to the two prior candidates we talked about.
Jason, is that, and I use this term only because it's been used in the presidential election race, is this Catherine Hanaway playing the woman card? Is her ethical, her ability to model good ethics in Jeff City something she's lifting up in light of some of the bad behavior that's happened over the last couple sessions?
Possibly. And she hasn't been in elected office since 2004, which I think could either be an asset to her or a liability. I think it also is notable that she is the only woman of this four-person field. And oftentimes when you have multi-candidate primary where it's all men and one woman, sometimes the female candidate has an advantage. Now, it didn't happen in 2012 when Sarah Steelman was the only woman in the three-person primary that Bruner and Todd Akin were involved in. But I think that sometimes female voters are gravitated to female candidates as well as male candidates are gravitated to female candidates as well. I do think she is emphasizing the U.S. attorney experience, maybe over the Speaker of the House experience, partially because it kind of gets this tough on crime and I'm a prosecutor message out, which will be kind of important in the general election when you're going up against someone like Chris Coster, who's attorney general and used to be a county prosecutor as well. I think that going back to my first point, I think that the thing that may be potentially detrimental to her cause is she hasn't run for office in a long time. She has another person who, again, is kind of occupying the same space as the experienced governmental person in Peter Kinder, who is still in office, has run three successful statewide elections, and has garnered a lot of goodwill among activists and grassroots people over the last few years. So she does have a lot of money. She is on TV. The ads that I've seen look pretty good and sound pretty good. And I think that she does bring a lot to the table, but there are going to be others in this race who are trying to occupy the same spot at the table, so to speak.
What do you think, John? You saw her in action the other night.
She's very good. I mean, she's a trial lawyer, and she's presented opening statements and closing arguments before juries before. This is a woman who can think on her feet. I think it's a good point you make, Jason, about her being the only woman in the race. And I'm with you. I think she will play the law and order card. She talked to the Ferguson is going to be a big issue. It certainly was the other night. It has been in prior forums. She plays that card that the current attorney general did nothing to prosecute or to
right.
never mind that the attorney general has to be invited into the fray.
Right. But it's
and,
always
and, I, and
Jay
I'm kind
Nixon
of kicking and... myself for not calling her on that.
Right.
I'll give Kevin McDermott of the Post-Dispatch some credit for raising that issue post-debate.
It's always Jay Nixon and Chris Coster didn't do this.
Didn't get the job done in Ferguson, and that's going to be a theme throughout her campaign.
There was a great moment, I thought, John, in that debate that I think is very telling both about Eric Greitens and about Catherine Hanaway, an interaction with the two of them.
They don't get along.
Well, here's what that sounded like.
Sorry. Yeah, I wouldn't
put the blame on law enforcement officers. I actually think this is a community issue, and we all need to come together.
So on day one.
Well, and that's a ridiculous mischaracterization of what I just said.
Yes, it is a fundamental misunderstanding
of how law enforcement works, Eric. And I'm not surprised you've never worked with law enforcement. You've never been there.
You've never executed a search warrant or an arrest warrant or made a closing argument or presented evidence.
I know you're trying to interrupt me, and that's okay. I'm not going to let you. You like to prejudge the facts. That's the mistake this governor made in going to Ferguson and prejudging the facts. Don't prejudge or mischaracterize what I'm saying tonight.
So no lost love between those
no,
two.
No, in fact, the three of them at times will gang up on
Greitens. Yeah, that was Peter Kinder
jumping in
to defend Catherine Hanaway.
What Catherine Hanaway said was, and I'm reading from the transcript, right now I think that there is, in this relationship, a sense in some neighborhoods that police are only there to chase people and not to protect people. I took it that she meant there's a feeling, not that that was actually the case, okay? Greitens took advantage of that line, sort of, and that really set her off. And Kinder jumped in as well.
Yeah, to defend Catherine Hanaway.
Yeah.
Jason, when you see the interaction between these two, how do you think that plays out in the general electorate?
Well, I mean, Greitens has the most amount of money. He's obviously kind of an irritant to many Republican insiders, so I'm not surprised that they tried to attack him on this issue. But I kind of want to take the lens back and talk about all five candidates' stances on what I would colloquially call a post-Ferguson agenda.
You're counting Chris Koster in the five candidates.
I'm also counting Chris Koster in this. I talked to all five candidates, and Joe Manus talked to Chris Koster about this. And I asked them all what they plan to do policy-wise post-Michael Brown. And I got to tell you, and I talked to some people with the Ferguson Commission after this article came out, there are not many people who want to change how public policy is towards law enforcement that have much confidence in any of the five candidates to actually move the needle on that issue, because all five have basically gone out of their way to show how much solidarity they are with law enforcement and at times kind of needle or even in some cases kind of openly criticize what many African-American activists and non-African-American activists want to see changes in public policy. So I really thought that that interaction, while it was entertaining, I don't really think it changes the reality that neither Greitens or Hanaway would do a huge amount to change like statutory things to how law enforcement does their job, because they're all trying to convey this message that they're tough on crime, that they support the police. And then I just have to wonder, if you are a member of the African-American community that has been racially profiled, that has been demeaned or harassed or disrespected by police, what sort of message that sends, that the next governor of this state is not necessarily going to take your concerns as first and foremost? And I mentioned Chris Koster in that because I think that he's taking a less bellicose tone in some instances, and I think that he is signing on to some policies, but his entire statewide career has emphasized his kind of symbiotic relationship with law enforcement, and he's often been endorsed by major law enforcement groups. So I think that there is kind of an apprehension to how much he's actually going to commit to if he becomes governor.
He's a former prosecutor and a former Republican as well. Here's the other thing, Jason. I wonder what your thoughts are on this. This is a primary. All four of these Republicans are talking to the base, trying to get those votes. Do they come back a bit toward the center and start to reach out and discuss those kinds of policies when they get to the general election?
I'm not really sure. I mean, to his credit, Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder has often talked about throughout the years his explicit work and overtures to the African-American community. And he did this back in long before he was running for governor. And I think that he's tried to embrace especially economic development opportunities that he feels will help distressed neighborhoods. He's been doing that for a while. He's hoping that if he is the nominee, that might help him get a little bit more votes in St. Louis and Kansas City.
In fact, but Jason, let's play a little bit from the debate The other night where Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder talks a little bit about this, and I think in a surprising way.
I have been one who has appealed across party lines. A rare Republican who shows up in the inner city and in North St. Louis County. In fact, I launched my campaign from the Delwood Ferguson neighborhood and was proud to do so, was introduced by an African-American Democrat. Ask around about my reputation among elected Democratic officials and rank and file citizens in the St. Louis region especially, and you'll find they will tell you I'm a person of goodwill who reaches out and works with anyone of goodwill.
I have to say, I think that's the only suggestion in this whole debate, and maybe in several of the debates that I've seen, that where any of these candidates want anyone to believe that any Democrat likes them.
He saw an opening. He took advantage of it. And again, this is a guy who embraces his insider status. He also said, I've been in the Capitol. I've been in the committee hearings. I've been a part of the process. I've got those connections on both sides of the aisle. So as opposed to an Eric Greitens, who's positioning himself as the outsider, Peter Kinder is on the exact opposite. He says he's talking about the fact that he's an insider and can make things happen.
I'm curious, as the two of you watch this race unfold, where do you see the most significant policy differences among these four candidates? We've obviously got different styles. We've got different backgrounds. We've got different authenticity and their ability to claim outsider status. But when it comes right down to it, in terms of the laws they would sign or not sign, the things they would fund or not fund, where do you find any real differences? John?
The biggest difference that has come up in past debates, it didn't last Monday, was Senate Joint Resolution 39, the religious freedom, and that's where Eric Greitens stepped up away from the pack and said, hey, I'm a pragmatist here. It's going to cost us jobs. There are some other nuances in there, for example, on transportation. A couple of them have talked about their willingness to consider gas tax hikes, but only if other revenue cuts are made,
right,
or spending is brought under control.
And with voter approval, really couching that in terms of it being a constitutional
amendment. It's
very
nuanced amendment at this point.
That's right. Jason?
Well, yeah, the Greitens opposition to SJR 39 is obviously one that's been talked about a lot. One that I don't think has been talked about as much is tax credits. Especially in St. Louis, the historic preservation tax credit and to some extent, the low-income housing tax credit have been pretty significant tools to either rehab buildings or to provide housing for the low-income and elderly. And while I think there are some candidates in the race who often kind of not specifically but subtly kind of criticize those incentives, if you go back and look at his past statements on the issue, Lieutenant Governor Kinder has been a pretty big supporter of those incentives and has been pretty fiercely critical of some of the critics of that effort to curtail those initiatives. I would say if you're talking about something that is actually a pretty big point of policy discussion in Jefferson City on a year-to-year basis, I think that is like a pretty significant policy difference between Kinder and some of the other candidates. But I don't think that they've been really asked about that specifically. So I don't want to prejudge what the other three will say, other than I have heard them kind of decry, quote unquote, corporate welfare, which is often a code name for that particular incentive.
Right. John, you gave them a chance to talk about what they would do to improve the Missouri economy the other night.
We did, and a lot of them come back to the same themes. But to your point, Jason, I do recall, I want to say it was in the Springfield debate, where they asked the candidates about the Kansas approach. And a couple of the candidates talked about how Kansas had botched it because they did not close enough of those kinds of loopholes and tax credits and exemptions and things. So that is an issue I think, I agree, needs to be fleshed out a bit more.
I want to ask about money. Both of you have made passing reference to the money in this campaign and particularly to the funding that Eric Greitens is seeing flow into his campaign. John, I know you've looked into this. What's happening in terms of the financial race?
Well, right now, Greitens seems to be the guy that's bringing the money in the first quarter of this year. The first reports were due mid-April. He's collected over $1 million.
And where is it coming from?
Well, a lot of it's coming from out of state. A lot of it is coming from California, New York. He started. I noticed in Q1 versus Q4, he did have more Missouri dollars flowing in. But the big rap on him is that it's outside money that's fueling his campaign. Hanaway only raised $254,000. Bruner $158,000. Of course, he, as Jason pointed out, has loaned himself a significant amount of money, more than $3 million. And Kinder only $328,000. The guy who's sitting pretty right now is Chris Koster. He's
right.
Sitting on a pile of cash,
that
he doesn't
have
to spend a dime.
That's right. Jason, as you look at those same numbers, what stands out to you?
What stands out to me is that Greitens needs that large amount of money because he needs to increase his name recognition. Right now, as one of the downsides of being a non-elected politician, especially a non-statewide politician, is a lot of people don't know who you are. So you need to raise a lot more money to get your name out there earlier. And I think even some have been a little bit surprised he hasn't released his ad sooner to increase his name recognition. John Bruner basically has to do a somewhat similar thing, although I think he has a little bit of name recognition from running for the U.S. Senate and running a lot of ads on TV. There has been kind of this assumption that since Kinder has run and won statewide office three times, he doesn't need to spend as much money in the primary in order to win. He needs to have some money, and he needs to be able to go on TV and radio and have the type of campaign infrastructure to be viable. And in the early going, I think he was kind of not raising a huge amount of money, but recently he's gotten a couple of big donations. And I think that just if you look at his fundraising, it may just be enough for him to be at that level that he runs a credible primary campaign. And if he's able to harness his name recognition to win that primary campaign, there's an assumption that when the general election comes around and they may do polling showing that the race is close, he probably will get a lot of money from the Republican Governors Association, and it'll be pretty much a fairly – I don't want to say an even money race because I think Koster will have more money, but at least in a position where someone like Kinder will be able to be competitive in the general.
You know, I'm struck with Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder, obviously the name recognition leader, obviously the statewide election experience. But with that usually comes the negative publicity and the negative associations. And we know that Peter Kinder has had some of those in past campaigns and past news. Those don't seem to be coming up very much in this campaign. It has not been a terribly negative campaign in that way, even with Peter Kinder's name recognition. Is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say. Jason, what's your thought on that? I haven't seen anything about the alleged stripper incident
strip
in St. Louis
right,
and
right.
Anything like that, at least in any of the forums.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think there was one remark from Greitens in one of the forums, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of the candidates did polling, and if they saw that Kinder was ahead, they started attacking him on a whole variety of things. Because one of the downsides of being in elected office for a long time is you do accumulate a record and you do kind of accumulate, situations that are not necessarily 100% flattering toward you. But as a kind of a counterpoint, in 2012, Brad Lager spent several million dollars against Kinder, just basically scorching him on a lot of those aforementioned controversies. And Kinder ended up winning that primary and winning a general election where he was attacked on some what's similar grounds. I guess my point for bringing that up is even if it does come up in the primary, I think that at this point, Kinder and his campaign team are probably experienced enough to be able to rebut it and being able to counterattack if necessary. I mean, one of the reasons Kinder has won three statewide elections is he can be very effective at punching back if he's punched first. And we'll have to see if that's effective. And also the other thing for him that I guess is a kind of a demerit is just as Bruner and Greitens are occupying a similar space, Hanaway is going to be trying to occupy a very similar space as Kinder. She's going to have more money than him at this point. And she does have the entire U.S. attorney record that could be very right. appealing to people. So, as I think as you said on the outset, like, it's what makes this race so compelling because you really just don't know how it's going to turn out.
Before we get out of here, John, you actually, as co-moderator of that debate, you got to interact a little with the candidates. You got to see them before the cameras were turned on. Is there anything that we may not know or recognize about these four from your observations of them when the lights are down?
You know, I really didn't, believe it or not, I didn't spend a whole lot of time mm-hmm. around them prior other than in the studio. I would say there was a fair amount of interaction between Hanaway and Kinder. Bruner was kind of in his own world, but I will say they were all quite friendly to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, and their staffs got along fine.
They've done this a lot.
They've done this a lot. That was their 12th forum, and I think there are some more coming. They've gotten to know each other well. And when the lights on, when the TV cameras go on, that's when you saw the Hanaway Greitens and the Kinder jumped in. But I didn't notice anything compelling
yeah.
that struck me as friction.
And Jason Rosenbaum, you're getting ready with St. Louis Public Radio to put together another debate between these four candidates. When is that again?
July 6th at 7 p.m. And it's going to be broadcast. It's several different NPR affiliates, I think, in mainly outstate Missouri, as well as the St. Louis area.
And as you make plans for that debate, what do you think will still need to be explored? How will you what issues will you focus on that maybe we haven't yet heard enough about?
Well, I must say, and I'm not just saying this to you know, suck up to the people on the show. The debate that I saw this week was really well done. I thought that the questions and the follow-up questions were really on point. And I say that because some of the other forums or public debates, some of the questions have been somewhat general. Some of them have even been kind of out there. And I'm not going to point out which ones. You can kind of decide for yourself. And I think that this was a particularly well-rounded debate. But I think with ours, after a month has passed and, you know, the candidates have kind of been on the air for a month, I think we're going to, first of all, have to see what type of issues are kind of at the public consciousness because we don't know what that's going to be in a month. But I think that a lot of the issues we'll tackle include, you know, how we move forward in a post-Ferguson environment, economic issues and incentives, and just the lay of the land in Jefferson City. And I think that it's oftentimes hard to get these candidates to talk specifics because oftentimes in debates they are a bit talking points heavy, so to speak. But I think that we're really going to try to ask them specifically what their vision is for the state on things that not only affect political reporters like me, but affect all Missourians.
Well, we will be looking forward to that. I want to thank both of my guests on today's podcast. John Holt, Fox 4 News. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Brian. Been fun.
And Jason Rosenbaum joining us by phone from St. Louis Public Radio. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
And good luck on July 6th. I'll be looking forward to that.
Thank you very much.
But before you go away, it is our tradition here on Statehouse Blend that we end with a song of our guests' choosing. And because there are two of you, you each get to propose a song, and I will choose the one we should end on, something that you think really captures moment in the life of Missouri politics. Jason, you're the experienced veteran of this show, so I'm going to make you go first.
I'm going to go with Teenage Riot by Sonic Youth.
Oh, my gosh.
That is an excellent, excellent choice. That's a tough one to beat.
I can't top that.
You've got to try. You've got to try.
Boy.
The nice thing to do would be to cut out this long pause from the final version of this podcast, but I think we're going to leave it in just so we can see how hard you're working.
Yeah, you're going to.
Do both of you know that song, by the way?
I don't.
I don't either, but I'm going to act like I do.
It is an incredibly good song.
And it fits the times?
I don't want to prolong this show any longer, but if you listen to the lyrics, they're almost prophetic, even though it was written, I think, in the late 80s or early 90s to today. So,
well, it sounds like John Holt is conceding.
I'm conceding. You're clearly a lyricist and a guy who knows his music, so I want to hear it.
Well, here it is. Thank you both for being here today. I really appreciate it. All right, credits. Statehouse Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can find us on iTunes or on kcur.org/statehouseblend. If you use Twitter, that's a great way to keep up on the show and also the news from Jeff City and Topeka. I'm at PTS Brian. John Holt, where can they find you on Twitter?
At John Holt News.
And Jason Rosenbaum?
At J Rosenbaum.
You can also follow my co-host Sam Zeff at Sam Zeff. We try to use the hashtag StateHouseBlend. You can find a shorter version of us on the air on Tuesday mornings as part of Up to Date. Steve Kraske makes a little space for us at 11 a.m. That's on KCUR 89.3. Any other thoughts or to be on the show as a citizen guest, send me an email. I'm at brian@kcur.org. I'm Brian Ellison. Thanks for being here.